Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Going to have Dr. Robert Sonora, Tino Sonora, on here. She'll be calling shortly. We often talk with, he's one of our leading economists, professor, University of Montana College of Business, from Croatia, as a matter of fact, two-time Fulbright recipient, and is in Croatia at the moment. And so we're going to get a call from him, because a lot of times we're talking about our American economy, our Montana economy, but the guy's kind of a global jet setter, so to speak, and so he's got a perspective, and it's not just a book read. He's lived there as well. So we're going to check trade with the United States. We're going to check the war in Ukraine. We're going to check China's shadow over the European Union and the economic impact there, as well as our relations, our trade relations and other relations. They've been strong. They continue to get stronger in some areas. Of course, politics has a part to play in that as well. So Tino Sonora, Dr. Robert Sonora on today. And a bit later on, Patty Rambo is going to join us. Her brother, Arthur Rambo, was awarded the Bronze Star, the Silver Star, the Purple Heart, and there's going to be a bridge dedication to this beloved man from the northwestern Montana area, Libby area in particular. So that's going to be a bit later on. We'll talk with Patty Rambo about Arthur Rambo today on Voices of Montana. Dr. Robert Sonora, professor, University of Montana College of Business, and I said as well, previously a visiting scholar of economics and at the Faculty of Economics at the University of Zagreb, Croatia, and just a lot of experience around. He's in Croatia right now, too. How's the wind blowing there? How you doing, Tino?
I'm doing fine, Tom. Thanks. How about yourself?
Doing good. Doing good. We get our share of rain here, in case you're wondering. If you planted a garden or if you fertilized your lawn, there'll be some mowing to do when you come back, sir.
Awesome. I mean, at one time I came back, I had like a foot of grass growing in my yard and was the talk of the neighborhood. So.
Love it. Hey, thanks for coming on. I appreciate that. Let's kind of, you know, what's top of mind? If, you know, you're there in Croatia, tell me what you're doing there. But what are some of the things that are top of mind when we talk about our European relationships with the United States? What are they talking about?
Well, right now I'm doing my visiting scholar thing here at the University of Zagreb. So I've got class tomorrow. I had class last week, so busy on that kind of stuff. But in the meantime, Croatia is a little bit strange. There's not a lot of trade between the United States and Croatia. So most of the sort of trade-related stuff that comes through Croatia is primarily sort of via the EU. I mean, the EU is obviously, if you take the EU as a whole, it's one of the largest countries in the world, the European Union. And so there are significant trade between the EU as a whole and the United States. But so far, Croatia doesn't seem to be that, you know, I was talking to friends of mine, they don't seem to be that involved in it and everything. But obviously, the impacts via Europe might change things. I think one thing that might be important for places like Croatia or anywhere on the seacoast or anywhere on the coast is could be just some tourism diversion. So a lot of, you probably have heard that in the United States, tourism industry is set to fall by $25 billion this year is sort of what's guessed, which is about 7% of tourism is going to go down as a result of the tariff. So we could see some sort of diversion away from United States tourism towards places on any of the coasts here in Europe. Croatia has become an increasingly large tourist destination. So I suspect maybe people that are sort of don't want to go or have, are a little bit skittish about coming to the United States for tourism purposes might sort of transfer over to here instead of going over there.
Yeah.
That's a guess.
Give us a taste of the culture.
Well, that's a very big question.
I know. Yeah. So you can't go wrong.
I don't even know where to start with that one. Like I said, it seems like there isn't a whole lot of concern here. There's been a considerable amount of inflation in Croatia over the past couple of years. Croatia joined the Eurozone 2 years ago, I believe, And so I think what has been foremost on many people's minds is just inflation. Also, emigration with an E. A lot of Croats have been leaving Croatia and moving to places, you know, the usual suspects, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, perhaps, maybe the UK. So I think those are maybe bigger things that are on their minds, per se, than are the tariffs at this particular point. So far, I haven't had any, like, overwhelming responses to tariffs. Although, if you look at Europe as a whole, I think there is a sort of changing behavior about what Europeans as a whole are willing to import from the United States. There has been some support for boycotts against U.S. imports because of the tariffs, much like you see in Canada. I think a similar sort of reaction. I think you see a lot of confusion too, perhaps over this switch, not just in the economic realm, but in the geopolitical realm as well. But if we just sort of stick to economics, I think there's just sort of a little bit of confusion. You know, I mean, European tariffs on American goods, American imports, were higher than they were in the United States prior to Liberation Day, or whatever you want to call it, April 2nd. But we're not talking a lot. We're talking, you know, 1.7% average tariff rate on U.S. imports versus a 1.3% tariff rate on European imports in the United States. So not that much. So I think more of it is just that sort of shock about, you know, why are you doing this?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of that going on here, too. But like I've said, I felt Trump has had a pretty soft touch over all of this, knowing, I think, the risks of this kind of policy, and then, you know, gauging the wind and the direction and being able to change on that. Dr. Robert Sonora is with us. It's Tino Sonora, friend of the program, professor, University of Montana College of Business, and visiting scholar of economics at the Faculty of Economics at the University of Zagreb, which he's right now in Croatia. And let's move to the European Union a little bit here as well. I mean, you're right. I think it was a couple of years ago, 2023. What is the European Union? I mean, what kind of autonomy does Croatia? I know there's 27 members. What kind of autonomy do states or countries have? How does this European operate in relative to how maybe other systems that we understand in our country operate financially?
Right. I mean, the European Union is kind of like a United States of Europe. It has its roots back in the aftermath of World War II. There's something called the European Coal and Steel Commission that was founded. That sort of was an attempt to liberalize trade for some manufactured goods and some imports and exports of things like minerals, to try and liberalize trade. And a lot of that came out of the sort of ashes of the year of World War II, where member states decided that you might, by creating an economic union amongst member states, create a little bit more peaceful environment, you know. So if you think about it, there had been how many wars between, you know, 1900 and 1945. You know, you've got two or three Balkan wars, a Spanish Civil War, you've got World War One, World War Two. Then, you know, aftermath of the Versailles Treaty in Germany and all the things that engendered. And then it sort of grew into the European Economic Commission and community, and then the European Union, which is basically a United States of Europe. So think about, just like the United States has a border, and Montana is inside that border of the United States. You know, Europe has a border, and Spain is inside of that border of the European Union. And all of the member countries have basically the same tariff rates against any other country relative to for their imports. So just like Montana and Idaho, we have the same tariffs against, I don't know, Chinese imports. So does Spain and Portugal. And so Croatia joined the European Union in 2013. And then the Eurozone, which is a little bit different, I'll talk about that in a second, a couple of years ago, as I said. But the European Union is just basically a economic community where you have a centralized government which doles out money, much like the federal government does, and takes in some taxes, and supports member countries. There's common policies across all the countries, although there is some degree of autonomy across the various countries. But suffice to say, in terms of their fiscal policies, there's a lot of autonomy with respect to their fiscal policies. But some of their sort of those European-wide policies are for everyone, much like we have a federal, you know, laws and policies and then state policies. So very similar in that front. The Eurozone is a single European currency union where all member states use the exact same currency. It is a subset of the European Union. That is, just because you're a member of the European Union does not mean you're a member of the Eurozone. But they all share the same currency. So what you have is, much like in the United States, is you have a centralized monetary policy, which is conducted by the European Central Bank, which is their version of the Federal Reserve. And then, but you do have separate fiscal policies across the member states. So every individual country can conduct fiscal policy, that is government expenditures and taxes, as they see fit within a certain sort of guardrails, if you will, or within certain constraints.
Yeah. What do you, and you're an economist and you've got experience in both the U.S. and in Europe there. What do you think that each could learn from each other in terms of, you know, their economic policy? What does the European Union do good that the U.S. can do good, or vice versa?
Yeah, well, I mean, Europe has been sort of on a downward trajectory for quite some time. I mean, I think, you know, one of the lessons that you take from Europe is it can be a little bit heavily regulated, particularly in labor markets. Labor markets in the United States are far more dynamic, much more fluid. We tend to have much lower unemployment rates. You know, some would argue that that's because of the strong safety social net that you have for unemployment insurance, say, in here or in Europe, although those have been in decline. But I think the biggest lesson that Europe could take from the United States is removing some of the regulations that it has. You know, there's a lot of non-tariff, what we call non-tariff barriers to trade, too. It's not just that there are tariffs, there are also non-tariff barriers, and these would be things like, you know, harmonized beef for GMOs and these kinds of things. Which restrict imports and exports across Europe and the United States, and you could sort of think about that as being sort of a form of tariff. But you know, ironically, both the United States and Europe both restrict imports of have the same kinds of non-tariff barriers. So, for example, the United States wants to export its beef, but Europeans don't like, you know, the hormones that are used in U.S. beef. Well, as it turns out, the United States doesn't like the hormones in European beef. So even though they're both kind of having these what we call non-tariff barriers against hormonized beef because they both can't agree on the types of hormones that are legal or allowed or whatever you want to call it. So I think we have to sort of figure out a way to restrict or reduce some of these kinds of restrictions that are in a sense kind of I don't want to say arbitrary, but seem a little bit kind of, you know, silly. I know that one of the big trade wars that would happen between Europe and the United States was the great banana trade war, which I think lasted for about 30 or 40 years.
Wow.
It was basically, you know, Latin American bananas versus Caribbean bananas. And the United States argued that Caribbean bananas had excessive curvature of the fingers, and so were not really bananas. And so we couldn't import Caribbean bananas. Anyway, so these kinds of silly things, I think, you know, much like what we have with Canada, I think kind of these, I don't call them silly, but very sort of strange non-tariff barriers that exist. Again, as I said, before April 2nd, tariff barriers between U.S. and Europe on average were below 2%. That's almost nothing.
Yeah.
On average, right? That's for everything. And now we're at minimum of 10%. And then some industries are specifically targeted and have, you know, steel and aluminum, say, have 25% tariffs. You know, imported liquor and wine to the United States has a tariff subject to 200%. And, you know, the Europeans are responding in kind. So
the dedication of the Staff Sergeant Arthur J. Rambo Memorial Bridge takes place on Sunday, May 25th at 1 o'clock. Patty Rambo, Arthur's sister, is going to be joining us here in just a little bit to talk about that dedication and talk about Arthur. There's a scholarship program as well that is, well, it's actually a memorial scholarship too. So we'll talk about that. And it's been going on for the past 56 years. But that's ahead. Right now, Dr. Robert Tino Sonora is with us, professor, University of Montana College of Business, also visiting scholar of economics at the Faculty of Economics at the University of Zagreb in Croatia. He's a two-time Fulbright recipient as well, and a friend of the program over there in Croatia right now. As we're talking about the European community as well, you know, trade relationships, maybe, you know, the shadow of war over there, the U.S. dollar versus the euro. Get to those things in a minute here. Let's welcome Nancy. Nancy listening in Roundup with a question for our friend here, Dr. Sonora. Good morning, Nancy. You're on the air here on Voices.
Well, good morning, Tom. Good morning, Professor Sonora. You know, you're spot on. A lot of this trade imbalance happened after World War II. We were such a huge, mighty power that won a terrible, terrible world war. And not only did we make the military-industrial complex, but that's when we started to realize that we have to help our European allies that were actually leveled during World War II. And we started to give up a lot of our manufacturing to them. I can remember as a kid in the 1950s when Japan was making junky little toys that we used to laugh, made in Japan. Well, the Japanese got angry with the U.S. government, and they demanded that we help them out more. And so that's when the United States government allowed them to start manufacturing automobiles like the Toyota that competed with our vehicles here in the USA. And we had to do something about this trade imbalance. And, you know, the tariffs on, you know, the U.K. Has helped our beef growers here in Montana. It's opened up the doors for trade with beef and also ethanol products. And, you know, I am really a firm believer that President Trump is on the right thing. And with this one beautiful bill, which is going to lessen regulation, that's even going to help us out more. But I want to mention the millennial generation, my grandsons. I have one 31 and two that are 29 years old, and the baby's 24. They are huge, huge consumers. They buy a lot of quality big items and pay top dollar for it. So I think that's going to be in our benefit, too. But it's a fascinating conversation this morning, and I don't know, I just see a bright light in our future, and I hope you agree, Professor. A lot of people are doom and gloom. I'm very optimistic about the future of America and our manufacturing. We do own the world trade markets. China has just found this out the hard way. So thank you, and I'll listen off air.
Yeah, thank you, Nancy. I appreciate that. A lot to go off of there, including the long history and you know, that relationship. Every little thing that Europe does, every little thing that the United States does impacts each other.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think Nancy was spot on, too, with her discussion about in the aftermath of World War II. I mean, you know, manufacturing, obviously in Europe and Japan and other countries that were directly impacted by World War II, you know, had to start from zero almost, you know. And I remember those cheap Japanese toys. And then, you know, they were cheap Korean toys. And then they were cheap, you know, Taiwanese toys, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, a lot of the heyday of U.S. manufacturing is precisely right. I mean, the United States was the hub of manufacturing in the immediate aftermath of World War II. So 1950s, 1960s, kind of the heyday of what we think of American manufacturing. But, you know, we've also benefited from the investments that European countries made in their manufacturing base, as well as Japan and Korea. Because now we can get stuff from them, and we sell stuff to them. It's also kind of important to note that, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about the decline of employment in manufacturing in the United States over the past 20 or 30 years or so, and that's absolutely true. But we should also note that there has been a similar decline in manufacturing employment in places like Germany and places like Japan over the exact same period. The United States decline, it might have been a little bit faster. But suffice to say, it has been happening globally, and it's happening in China now. I mean, employment in manufacturing is now being outsourced to places like India or Bangladesh, Vietnam, et cetera, et cetera. So we all go through these sort of product cycles where we start small, like Nancy said. You know, the Japanese started making little plastic toys, and then they started making radios, and then they started making TVs, and then they started making et cetera, et cetera, and now they're where they are. And then they kind of pass the torch on to a little less developed country, and then they sort of take up the slack, and then they move on to somewhere else and then pass the torch on to somebody else. So what the United States is really, really good at is ideas. We are very good at producing new ideas and new ways of doing things. And we have that, again, going back to the dynamism that we have in our markets, that if we could just sort of continue to carry on down that road, I think we do have a good future ahead of us.
Is there a struggle? We got like about two minutes left here. Is there a struggle? I know, right? It does go so fast.
You know, it's so fast.
Yeah. Is there a struggle between China, the U.S. and Europe? The dollar's involved in that. The euro's involved in that. Give us a, you know, it's 3 minutes, but give us a 2.5 on China and the dollar, the euro, and all those things impacting Europe right now.
Yeah, I think what's kind of an interesting thing that could potentially be happening over the foreseeable future is because of the tariff barriers raised on Chinese goods, that those Chinese exports will be diverted away from Europe. I'm sorry, away from the United States towards Europe. Mm-hmm. And we'll have sort of a bifurcation of inflation rates potentially in the United States and Europe. So the inflation rates will start to rise in the United States, which will kind of force the Fed's hand to start raising rates because they're not very happy about inflation. While at the same time lowering inflation rates in Europe. And in fact, we're already seeing the ECB lowering its version of the federal funds rate, its interest rate, to sort of prevent, you know, deflation or even disinflation or disinflation and potentially deflation, which is sort of kind of a crazy thing because usually the Europeans and the U.S., for the most part, in the past 10 or 15, in the aftermath of, say, the Great Recession, have kind of followed-ish the same sort of interest rate policy at the central banks. But now I think we might start seeing that to start to change. With respect to the dollar, really quickly, you know, I think there's been some concern in the dollar, and the dollar has weakened about 10% to the euro compared to what it was 3 months ago. There has been movement out of U.S. stock markets into European stock markets, which has helped raise the value of the euro vis-a-vis the dollar. Although the stock markets in the U.S. have been sort of rallying back, so we might see a little bit of volatility in that dollar euro exchange rate as people try to move their money around to get the best return on their dollars. So we'll just keep an eye on that over the foreseeable future.
Gosh, I love how it's you know, so simple but so complex at the same time. You know, basic principles apply, but there are so many elements that make up those basic principles. Really interesting.
Oh, it's infinitely complex.
Yeah. So I got less than a minute now. What are you doing there again? Just give us a sense of how you're going to enjoy your summer, kicking it off right there in Croatia, sir.
Well, you know, I do work here. It's not all okay. Fun and games for me here, and hopefully I'll get some traveling in. And I do like to ride my bike here, so I've been doing some bike riding, seeing friends. You know, wine here is really good. Food's here really good. Beers are getting better and better every year I come back. There's a whole bunch of craft breweries here, which are fun to explore. And those are all new over the past 10 years or so. So there's plenty to keep me busy.
Super fun
and
stuff.
I gave a presentation a couple days ago at the Croatian Institute of Public Finance. So wow. I do keep busy.
Thank you. Thank you, Tino. Appreciate that. Love chatting with you and love to see you down the road. Okay.
Thanks, Tom. Good to talk to you.
Let's get on to hear this dedication of Staff Sergeant Arthur J. Ramble, Artie, as Patty Ramble calls him. Patty joins us now from Libby, Montana. The dedication will be this Sunday, May 25th, at 1 o'clock p.m. And again, at Riverfront Park. Also, a memorial plaque to be installed there in the view of the bridge. Good morning, Patty. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Tom. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate this chance to encourage people to come to the bridge dedication.
Yeah, and there's a lot going on here too. And it was, I mean, this was like 50 plus years ago, right? When you guys lost Artie, and he still has an impact 56. Around there. 56.
56. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Talk about your brother.
You mentioned just a few minutes ago the word leadership, and I think that is one word that will describe Artie as far as the way people generated to him. He was just one of those genuine people that he didn't give any thought about. It's just who he was. And this entire project was started by an underclassman of Artie's who as I gather the information, the subject came up about Artie interceding and stopping a kid from bullying this person. Mm. And Mark Fantasy was in Libby, and he happened to be talking to Heath Kidwell. He's the senior vice commander at Post 1548. And he mentioned Art, and it came up. Mark Fantasy said, that bridge ought to be named after Art. And it kind of all generated from that. And I didn't really get involved with it until November-ish, because I figured if it's going to go forward, it's going to go forward with the respect and care that I felt Artie was deserving of. So
that's cool.
He was pulling bullies off of people when he was little, and yeah. I remember in high school he interceded in a bullying of a Indian friend that we kind of grew up with, and he didn't have to go. He had two deferments, and somehow he got a draft notice, and he was working for Texaco Oil Company, and they wanted to keep him where he was at, and he wouldn't let them fight this deferment. And he told his wife, Helen, he says, if I don't go, someone will have to go in my place. It's the price you pay for living here. And he just stepped up and went to Vietnam. So,
And he lost his life in a, it was on Thanksgiving Day, 1969, in Vietnam there as well. Posthumously awarded the Silver Star, the Bronze Star, the Purple Heart, and the Vietnamese Presidential Citation for actions in that mortar attack. Do you still talk about that? Is that hard to talk about, Patty?
Yeah. Anything to do with Artie is hard to talk about. Mm-hmm. Both my brother and sister are still closed down. I talk about it because when I came back to Libby and had a teaching job, it was important to me that my students knew about Memorial Day and Veterans Day and that freedom isn't free. And so, and I present his scholarship every year. So I've had to go public with it. And in a way, this bridge is vindication because I always break down and cry whenever I'm talking about Artie. The fact that everybody else recognizes how important he is to people kind of explains why I break down and cry all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I mean, anybody that knew him can't not choke up when they're talking about Artie.
Well, and that's the testament to a well-lived life, you know, even though it was short. Left behind Helen and two daughters, Carrie and Amy, they were both under the age of two when Artie was lost. I mean, you know, that had to be quite a struggle for them as well. You know, Patty, we can't talk about Artie without getting personal about these things.
No.
How are they doing? How long did it take for them to, maybe find some peace again or some semblance of normal life?
Semblance of normal life. Yeah, is a good term. I mean, we just all go on. And Helen told me, I'll never stop loving Artie.
Yeah.
And his younger daughter, because she was born after he was gone and grew up seeing pictures of Artie and the older daughter, Carrie Lynn. And so she just kind of stepped back and left that to be Carrie Lynn's thing. And when she was a senior, she went to D.C. on a close-up program.
Yeah.
And Helen had remarried and had two more kids, so everybody knew Amy as Christensen.
Mm-hmm.
And she was standing at the wall, and she had her fingers on Artie's name. And her teacher came up, and she says, is that somebody you know? And she says, yeah, it's my dad. Oh. And I asked her in Helena when she was at the testifying at the committee hearings for the Senate Bill 59 to pass. I said, is that the first time you ever really took a hold of the Rambo name, who your dad was, and she very quietly said yes.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I can understand that.
Having the bridge come about is joyful in one hand, and on the other hand, it has stirred up all of the stuff we kind of shoved in the closet for 56 years. So she did testify, in spite of the fact she said she wasn't going to, but she stepped up and she did testify. And you ask how they're doing. Amy's a lawyer in Helena, and Carrie Lynn is working in an emergency, physician working in an emergency room in Connecticut right now. So she won't be here at the bridge dedication. And unfortunately, Helen passed away a few years ago. Mm-hmm. But it's important that Helen's words get out there. And the last press release that I put out, it was important to me that I fulfill her last request, and that was, don't make Art a hero. And I didn't really comprehend it at the time. I kind of did, but I didn't. And she said, remember him as the man he was. Remember who he was. He's a warm, caring, talented, smart, resourceful, dedicated, and committed husband, father, son, brother, and friend. And so that's my tribute to his wife as well.
Yeah. Nicely, nicely said, nicely put. I want to ask, we got just a couple of minutes here. I want to ask about the Arthur J. Rambo Memorial Scholarship. 56 years. That's another really good way to honor this veteran.
Well, and I've asked some of the recipients of the scholarship to come to the bridge dedication and be at the table where the book to people to sign in will be, just to represent the scholarship and what it means to them. So
that's nice. How do people apply for that? I mean,
through the high school. It's online now. My brother Dan put it online, but it's a scholarship that goes through the high school here. And I found out during the legislative action in Helena that there's also a scholarship in Missoula that's dedicated to students that want to attend Notre Dame. And it was started as a means to get Amy to Notre Dame, and Amy graduated from Notre Dame. And Carroll College has a scholarship. So
that's really cool. So what's it going to be like as you know, down the road? I know there's a lot of emotions, and rightfully so, these things stir them up, but they're good, I think, in this regard. They need to go into the right places. What's it going to be like for you and for maybe Carrie and Amy and others to walk across that bridge? Have you thought about that?
Well, initially, I have to drive across just a lot. And initially, I thought it was going to be hard for me to do that. And maybe it will after the dedication. I've been over it a couple times and it was fine. But there wasn't a sign up there saying Staff Sergeant Arthur J. Rambo Memorial, you know. So I'm not sure. Like I said, initially, it was another one of those things that I thought was going to choke me up. So we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. Well, everyone's invited. That's going to be this Sunday, May 25th at 1 o'clock right there. And it's at Riverfront Park, and you'll got a plaque that you'll place on there. Thanks to a friend, Senator Mike Cuff from Lincoln County area as well for getting that bill across. Of course, it was, I think, the very first bill signed in this legislative session. Yeah, and the dedication is going to be this Sunday. Patty, keep in touch, okay? I'd like to see how you're doing and how everybody's doing down the road.
Well, I included this on the plaque, and it's the last line off of a poem that was written by a friend when he found out Artie was killed. And it says, I loved him, I mourned him, and now I shall live as he lived. What greater tribute could we pay him? And this was Mark Roscoe, and I can't think of anybody else that has lived his life in an admirable way. So that's included on the plaque.
Oh, nice. I'm loving it all. Patty, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom. This has been great to be able to get Artie's word out.
Yeah. Thanks. Have a great summer, too, okay?
Yeah, you too.
Yeah.
Take care.
So after Sunday, it'll be the Arthur J. Rambo Memorial Bridge. Congratulations on that to all who worked on that. And thank you, too, for all of your services. If you served in the military, sacrificed, family members, can't say it enough. We do mean it. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.